You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 314 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. Happy Pi episode, I guess.
I was going to say the same thing. Happy Pi.
Also, happy St. Louis, if I remember correctly, the area code. We did area codes last week, though, so I don't want to get caught in that discussion again. It's because I couldn't remember what 313 was. You missed a really interesting conversation last week, Foz, I got to say. But happy to have you back.
Damn. Oh, well.
Stephen is absent this week, and he left me in charge. So for those of you who have been around a while, you know what kind of disaster that means is on the horizon here. But
so this is where we get the, you know, in a few days when this comes out, we get the reports of we were left unattended.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Requests for adult supervision will return. However, the adult supervision perhaps will not. Which is, you know, I fully expect Stephen will return. I'm just not quite sure he qualifies as adult supervision these days. But anyways.
Allegedly, in the eyes of the listeners, he does. Or the ears of the listeners.
Yes, and the state of Oregon. But anyways, that's a whole different level of conversation we probably don't need to get into here. Let's talk about earnings, because some airlines didn't have any last quarter.
I don't think the airlines are going to have earnings for a while. It'll be negative earnings.
Yeah. Delta and United had their numbers out last week and the week before, I guess, but I think we missed the Delta numbers two episodes ago. So a lot of money lost. Billions, billions, billions.
I think the thing that amazes me is that Delta is cutting entire fleets. And the one that interests me the most is the 763s.
Not until 2025.
Okay, but they're taking the hit for it now?
Yeah, the money side of it is super interesting to me, actually. I can see if I can pull up the numbers while we're chatting here. They wrote off $2.2 billion in, I guess, whatever, with the aircraft write-offs. And it's like 200 planes. So pros, no more CRJ-200s.
Bonus.
I like that. Cons, 763s, and what else is going? There's another 717s are going. And when they put it together, the $2.2 billion, they eventually released the full detailed numbers. So it's 125 CRJ-200s, 91 717s, and 49 763ERs. The 200s will actually be gone by December 2023, so that's actually pretty quick, which is nice. The other two full fleets will be gone by 2025, although it's expected to be sort of a slow/partial retirements over time. So even with the write-off of $2.2 billion, there's another $520 million in value being considered. So they considered that they valued that whole fleet at $2.7-ish billion. But the breakdown was $2.5 million for a CR2, $10 million for a 717, and $18.5 million for a 763.
Crazy.
Even if that's the average, from what I can tell, those are roughly average sale prices right now. They're going to keep operating them for a few years. And I guess you could argue that theirs are some of the better ones. They probably have better avionics systems. They've got Wi-Fi hardware installed, except the not good Wi-Fi on the 717s and nothing on the CRJs, but the 763s have a satellite kit. I don't know. It's weird to me to see them valued that highly. And also a little surprising that they were willing to say already, yep, we're getting done with them. But also, I mean, the planes are old. There's not like there's a huge long-term outlook for them anyway. So why not commit to it now? Take the money off the books while you can, I guess, is the real thing.
But I guess the thing that surprises me is, A, I mean, the valuations are somewhat surprising. But the thing that I don't understand is, what is Delta going to replace the 763s with, right? Their outstanding orders for 350s and 330 NEOs isn't anywhere near the number of 763s they'd have to decommission. And you can't just walk into Target and pick up a 330.
Well, I mean, you sort of can today, given how many are getting returned to lessors, but
I don't think they'd want a classic, right? They'd probably want a NEO.
Probably. They still have a decent-sized fleet of classics also that they're keeping for a little while, if they had to pull some in as a stopgap. The other thing is, like, the 763 is a relatively small plane for the range it has, and compared to the, especially compared to the NEO in terms of seating capacity, but even compared to the 330s, I feel like.
Well, but remember, the 763 is the backhorse.
Workhorse?
Workhorse, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's an excellent portmanteau you pulled off there.
The backhorse of the JFK-LA route. Right? True. So are they going to dump 330s on there? 332s? 330 NEOs?
Well, so let's deviate from the topics here a little bit and get into those routes, the transcons. United also, Kirby is getting more aggressive in his statements about coming back on that route and specifically called out getting aggressive and competing on transcons. And for Delta, I could argue that over the next couple of years, it might make sense to scale back to 7.5s, or if they start taking the 321 Neos with a flatbed product, switching to those lower capacity. Business travel is going to recover more slowly, is the story everybody is telling and seems to be what we are seeing thus far. Is there a chance that maybe having reduced capacity would be useful on that route, or reduce premium capacity relative to the total number of seats? I don't know. And then you got United coming in and saying, like, yeah, we're going big on this route. Like, you could see United putting its high J-763s there because it's got nowhere else to put them.
Well, the interesting thing about transcons right now is we've had a shift in the last 6 months, and maybe or more recently, but pricing has flipped. So pricing out of Newark is substantially less than out of JFK for premium cabin. And I have no
idea. Is that because JetBlue brought Mint in?
Well, Mint exists at JFK.
Right, but they only started flying it out of Newark. Right, remember that United often would, for those premiums, would price Newark separately.
Agreed, but I mean, if we look at transcon as a broad, on a broader spectrum, right, not just LA, San Francisco, you can find $400 business seats on United 3 weeks out to pretty much any transcon city. You cannot find anything at a JFK for that price. It's double, if not more.
Yeah.
And which, I mean, it surprises me because there's very little competition at Newark, right? There used to be Alaska. Alaska's pretty much has one LA flight a day, but they're not even competing on price anymore. JetBlue's come into the market, but again, I mean, United's still running a lot more capacity, but nothing what they used to, but they're doing a handful of routes. JetBlue is, and United's just keeping P fares down if you book out far out and enough. So it's fascinating, the shift in pricing, and I don't know what's caused it.
Yeah, well, desperate for any cash to show up.
I mean, right, but you would think the same thing would be at JFK when you've got four carriers, if you can include Alaska, four, but three carriers who are flying premium transcon services.
Well, either demand stayed higher at JFK, which could justify Kirby's plan, or... I don't know. Or those airlines are happier to not worry about it.
Maybe. I mean, I don't think demand stayed higher simply because, you know, Americans cut down their, you know, from four or five to two a day, I think. So I don't think demand's, but something has clearly shifted that's keeping prices high out of JFK.
Yeah.
And it might be that more of those seats are going out empty.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know.
Right. The thing about the United flights is they're all full up front.
Well, you know, you can always fill a plane if you sell the seats cheap enough.
That's true.
Or almost always. These days, even selling them for giving them the seats away doesn't quite fill it. But even that's starting to shift, so we'll see. But anyway, we got into that talking about Delta retiring all its aircraft. Interesting, just in the numbers, going sort of back to the earnings calls, United came out with their release and pointed out that they lost less money than Delta, even putting aside the sort of one-time write-offs, and also got aggressive in stating that it's the approach to cutting capacity the most and then slowly returning it, they think is better for all the reasons Wall Street would care about, you know, unit costs and RASM and all that crap. Whether it's actually better for consumers, less clear, but... I don't know. Thoughts? They put out the release and in the prepared remarks said a few times, we are going to have the best numbers of anybody this quarter. Like, which, yay, but also, like, only losing $2 billion instead of five, I guess is good news, but, like, is that really what you want to be bragging about?
Well, it's kind of funny to me, right? The tables have turned a little bit in that United has taken a page out of Delta's old book of just launching one-off routes. And, you know, from handfuls of places. And I think that's part of what's making United somewhat successful with some of this Florida stuff they're doing. But Delta did that, you know, out of North Carolina. They did all that stuff to Mexico a couple of years ago, or dozens of cities that were flying to Mexico. So Delta used to be more adventurous, but it seems like they are just sticking to their hubs right now.
Yeah, well, I think it's also there are challenges of sort of where is the is there enough demand and can they fill it? Right? United announced all those routes. They really don't start until next month. And United announced a bunch more routes last week. Caribbean stuff, Central America stuff, all from hubs this time around. But really expanding. Some of it appears to be in direct response to JetBlue putting some new LA Costa Rica flights into play, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But others are like just huge push expansion into Mexico and the Caribbean. Denver's getting a few new cities. Which is still bizarre to me. Who else is getting stuff? Denver's, I got the list here. Denver's getting Belize and San Jose, Costa Rica. LA gets San Jose, Costa Rica, San Pedro Sula, Honduras, and San Francisco gets Liberia, Costa Rica. LA gets Liberia, Costa Rica, and a bunch of other stuff. Expands and increases frequencies. Washington to San Salvador, LA to Guatemala, Denver to Cancun and Puerto Vallarta, and yeah, just all sorts of stuff growing there. So I don't know.
I think there's pent up demand, right? So people want to go to more places, and I mean, as we go into month number 9, fun. You know, it's funny. I remember someone was recently telling me, right? You know, but when you go back to March, it was just like, oh, we're gonna shut everything down for 2-3 weeks so we can get through this, and here we are, eight and some odd months later, still in pretty much the same state. I almost wonder if like Delta has a if you know, not to make this political at all, but if the location of their hub plays into people's choice to fly through there. Really focus, I'm talking about Atlanta.
Atlanta, yeah. That people don't want to connect in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I wonder also, I had my work trip a couple weeks ago. I've got another work trip coming up in a couple weeks after the elections, and have been trying to figure out how to schedule it. And one of the things I found is that I am going to be much better served booking, you know, it's a 3 or 4 city week. So it's, you know, a little bit crazy, a city a day, all week long. And so, but it turns out that I will almost certainly be better booking it on 4 carriers rather than trying to get it all onto a single ticket or anything like that. And part of that is price. But part of it is there's no single airline that can get me nonstop service on all the routes I need, or even get me half of them. I have to split up to at least 3, if I remember correctly. So, and right now, I don't really want to fly connections. I don't want to sit in an airport longer than I have to. I don't want to deal with more people than I have to. I don't want to deal, you know, all of those things start to add up. And, you know, the whole idea that, you know, what the joke is, when you die, on your way to heaven, you still have to connect in Atlanta, right? Like, you know, is that a problem? And a counterpoint to that is, you know, can the point, so like we've seen the networks, route networks growing out with these sort of point-to-point routes, but then also you get Peter Elbers, CEO of KLM, in a interview he did last week with Eurocontrol, was talking about how the hub network strategy absolutely is going to survive. We're not going to just overfly hubs. The point-to-point service isn't, you know, there's not enough demand, and it's going to still, you're still going to need, you know, flow through hubs with small feeder airplanes. And so, yeah, part of me was like, you know, if all you got's a hammer, everything's a nail, right? It's a little bit of wishful thinking and willing it to be true. But also, there are some markets that are just too small.
But KLM only serves everything from one spot.
Right.
So they kind of need the hub. I mean, how, what else are they going to connect?
Well, right. I mean, that's right. That's my point. It's like, they're not going to suddenly launch flights from all the random little, like, Billund.
Yeah.
Right? They do a great job of connecting people from there, but they're not going to suddenly be able to launch nonstops. And no one is, right? Billund has whatever service it is. It's a small town in Denmark, for those who don't know.
Where Lego is based.
Yes.
Could you imagine?
It's also where the Jellingstone, it's the closest airport to that, if you're into history.
Could you imagine if all the European carriers decided to all start doing point-to-point?
Well, like, there is some of that, right? You got Ryanair, you get EasyJet, you get some of those to right. extent, but it's not everywhere all the time. I mean, when I went to Billund, I did a Ryanair flight from Budapest, maybe? I don't remember. It was in January. I don't remember which trip that was, our January drinking weekend. But somewhere in Eastern Europe had a nonstop to Billund for no apparent reason on Ryanair. And it happened to operate the day we were, like that Monday morning or Sunday night or whatever it was. And so we went and saw the Jellingstone. And then the next day flew out on Sun Air, which is the BA affiliate that flies tiny turboprops from there. If I remember correctly. So anyway, my point being that it does have some weird levels of service, but you're right. There's no way that we could see true point-to-point service from every airport everywhere. The network hub scenario does matter, but would it be scaled back for some of the sort of larger mid-sized markets?
Possibly.
It sort of comes down to can long-haul point-to-point, you know, is it long-haul LCC or not, but can the long-haul point-to-point market really survive and thrive, I feel like, right? You can do it locally, you can do it short-haul, but if, you know, get above 4 or 5 hour flight times and the economics changes and the demand profile changes so much, I just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think for point-to-point to work, right, you need high demand. Florida, you can get high demand if you time it right, but you wouldn't be able to do it for a number of other city pairs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good for them that they're trying something different. We'll see if it sticks, because historically they've been very stuck in their hub and spoke ways.
Oh, no, that's what they're sticking with. They are staying hub and spoke, if I wasn't clear on that.
The Florida stuff isn't right.
Oh, sorry. I thought we're back to United. I was still thinking of KLM. Sorry.
KLM can't do anything but hub and spoke.
Yeah. And now the U.S. carrier, I mean, United's doing it. JetBlue's doing it more this time. You could argue Delta was already there, so it doesn't need to do more of it. Haven't really seen too much of that from American yet.
We haven't seen much from American.
No, we're going to see some losses this week, so that'll be fun.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're making changes to status requirements.
Yeah, as I say, they've already conceded defeat for 2021.
Which is pretty telling. I mean, I just wonder how much further this goalpost is going to move, right? We were having a conversation where originally I was saying 2020, maybe late 2021, then 2022. Now we're hearing 23 or 24.
24 is the newest numbers from IATA for return to 2019. I think traffic, passenger count levels. It's not even revenue levels.
Will we ever really get back to that level of traffic, though?
Yes.
Okay. And that quickly, though?
I don't know when, but I absolutely believe the volume will come back.
The volume will come back, but I honestly don't think it'll be for 2024 either. I think it'll be a ramp up. I don't think it's going to be a big, big ramp up, but it'll be growth, right? Organic growth over time. So I personally would say 8 to 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, it might be a little faster than that. Part of it comes down to the economics, right? Like, are people who has, and it, maybe this accelerates some of the geographic shift in traffic. Like, if you think about it, the traffic has been the center point, which is, it's like a stupid way to look at things. But if you look at the average, like, location of originating traffic, used to be sort of somewhere towards Europe, and it has slowly been drifting eastward towards the Middle East and then onto Asia over the recent years. And China in September flew 98% of the passengers it flew a year prior, per the government. So numbers were still down a little earlier, and they've had some sort of flare-ups that they've had to sort of shut things down every now and then, but they're able to do that and test, 10 million people in an hour and be done with it, or a couple hours, whatever. But, the traffic is, the center of traffic is moving that direction. Maybe we don't see the resumption, the U.S. doesn't recover quite the same, but what if, on a global scale, if the total number of travelers in India and China, which were already chasing down the U.S. to become the number one market, maybe they just stay there, right? China's number one now.
Yeah. I mean, possibly, because I was thinking on the U.S. side, so many of the routes in the last few years where they've seen growth is all these summer leisurely routes.
Yeah.
And how many of those people are going to be open to be so freely traveling in the future, right, in the next 3-4 years? And I don't think all of them will. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of those routes come back for a while.
Well, there's, 25 million people unemployed today that weren't a year ago? So there's that.
Exactly.
They are much less likely to be looking for vacation travel.
That's true.
In my experience. But yeah, the AA status changes are interesting. Basically, everything except executive platinum, the qualification requirements went down. Even EXP went down, but not, you can't get the credit card exemption. I don't remember which one it is. Hold that up while we're talking here. The other thing that is interesting about it is the credit card exemption, which is basically you can use, if you spend $30,000 on the co-brand card, you get, you don't have to have your EQDs.
Huh. That's good.
Yeah. So,
except for EXP though.
It goes to gold becomes 20,000 miles, 40, 60, and 80. So executive platinum is discounted in terms of miles required. And it's also, EQDs are 2,000, 4,500, 7,000, and 12,000. And then if you have a co-brand card, you get that, you don't need the EQDs if you hit $30,000 except for, executive platinum.
So I wonder if they're seeing enough activity from their EXPs today that they're not discounting it at all.
Well, they're discounting the EQM and segment requirements, just not the EQDs.
But I'm wondering if they're seeing enough dollars come in, right? Because if you're keeping the dollar bar the same, then they still need to, they can fly less, but they still need to spend as much. And the question is, I mean, that would imply that they're seeing those people spend enough to maintain where they are.
Yeah. I think probably. The other thing about this is they're doing rollover status. Anything you fly in Q4 gets rolled over to 2021.
That's cool.
For earning. So, yeah, one segment I had last week or 2 weeks ago counts now. Yay. 185 miles, baby. Almost there.
Everything counts.
Yeah, every little bit helps, said the old lady. She pissed in the sea. Anyways, I don't know. I do think, though, conceding defeat that 2021 is just not going to be so good. Obviously, everybody knows that, but they are the first to sort of give up on the status plan there.
Yeah, it's always an adventure. I wonder
737 MAX.
737 MAX, the European, I hear the Europeans have blessed it.
They are getting very, very close. Yeah, that was a weird sort of news cycle. The head of EASA was like, yes, it's a very safe airplane. And everybody's like, yes, EASA has approved its return to flight. And it's not quite that simple. But EASA has come up as putting together its final paperwork to get it ready to be approved, similar to what the FAA is going to have. I think the real significance here is that there was some concern that EASA was going to try to require some extra things that the FAA didn't want to include the first time around. Where the FAA has previously said, you know, like, we have a process for continual improvements and continual updates for safety requirements on airplanes. And believe me, I get an email every time there's an airworthiness directive issued, and it's many a day. So that whole continuous improvements thing is very true. But what it sort of comes down to is that EASA appears to have backed off. I can't remember exactly what the requirement they wanted was. Maybe it was the extra AOA disagreement. They wanted a third or a synthetic one, and they've now backed off of that being a requirement, it seems, for return to service.
Did they make the indicator light standard now rather than an option?
I believe so. But EASA is getting close. The FAA has documents out for comment. It can't happen before November 2nd, because that's when the comment period ends. And then after that is they have to review the comments and decide if they're going to incorporate any of them, figure that out, and then eventually get things finalized and issued. So figure probably a week or two after the second. And then the airlines have to actually implement the training required. So in theory, Thanksgiving's viable, but probably December.
Yeah, it was. I don't know where I read it, but I heard that AA is trying to get them back into circulation before the end of the year.
Yeah, I saw that story today. Also, I think Bloomberg had it. I was actually, while we're chatting here, I was hoping to stall just enough to pull up my query of my ability to query timetables and see if I can get an answer on that.
So, you know, one thing I'm thinking about, you know, you made a comment earlier about business travel not rebounding anytime soon. Does this mean that business fares are going to get reset?
I don't know. Should it?
I mean, that's what we saw post 9/11, right? Delta introduced simple fares, and that helped rebound a lot of stuff. Airlines lost a lot of their profit margins overnight, but it got people back in seats.
I don't know. United is doing that on the domestic stuff, you said, right?
They are. But they haven't done it. You know, the difference between Delta doing simple fares and what's going on now, back then it was systematic and across the board. Right now it's more targeted. And so when it's systematic and across the board, then everyone else matches. When it's one-offs, you know, when it's targeted, it's not so easy to match.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't see the American flights in the schedule yet, but that's probably because the system I'm checking hasn't updated.
Well, they might not load them until they get blessed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they have to go back and redo.
No, I think they were. I think they were loaded as sort of what triggered the conversation.
Okay.
But I mean, Alaska Airlines has flights loaded for December 1st. So does United. Norwegian has them loaded every day and just doesn't operate them. they sub in or they don't operate them. Iceland Air has them loaded in as well. So it sort of just depends. And there's a bug in the code where I got to talk to someone about that, where Air Canada's flights are showing up as South Africa coded. So, oopsie. Yeah, it's like, wait, South Africa is operating from Heathrow to Halifax? I don't think so.
That doesn't sound right.
Yeah, and YYT is
St. John.
St. John, yeah. So, and those are actually scheduled for the end of October, but again, no expectation that those are actually going to operate. Really should send someone a note about this error. Eastern Airlines, speaking of random sort of point-to-point-ish routes, Bolivia and Argentina. Or it's the latest destinations and routes. They want Buenos Aires and Santa Cruz, Bolivia, VVI.
It sounds right.
Yeah. So I love it. Anyway, they're trying to do two or three times a week on those routes. I can't see why the FAA would deny the approvals, but that'll be interesting.
Eastern's just – I'm surprised they've lasted this long.
So am I. So am I. But they have, and they seem to be vaguely successful.
Which is even more surprising.
Yeah. I mean, did you even look at the JFK San Diego flight for your trip out west?
No. No. That requires me to go to JFK.
Fair enough. You still have a moods on the way back.
Yeah, no.
I will say they added new streaming entertainment systems, so you can watch movies on board now on your own phone. And they put a picture of the interiors on it as part of that story, and the seats are like 1980s Barca lounge or even an economy 6-inch thick padding. Like, it's crazy. It's the original equipment, I think.
So it sounds like an all around better in-flight experience than United.
Oh, hey. You know, United sort of has plugs for some of the stuff where you can charge your phone while you're streaming movies.
Yeah, but, you know, the Wi-Fi is still spotty.
Yeah, well, the onboard streaming part usually just works, but anyway.
If the Wi-Fi network stays up.
Yes, that's fair.
That is a pre-network.
Basically, yeah, and there's also the, like, people complaining so they reboot it and everything else thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Exciting, exciting. So this came up, this actually hit the internet like a few weeks ago, but I saw it during this past week, and I found this hysterical. I'm getting away from air travel for a minute here. All of the, and I didn't realize this, all of the bridges that are pictured on the euro notes, the bills, were fake.
Yep.
None of them existed because the bills are printed by the central bank, but the coins were minted by the individual countries. So the individual coins all had local whatever on them. And I've actually, you know, made a point of collecting them when I can, getting like a, you know, a 1 and a 2 euro coin in new countries when I visit, like, was it Liechtenstein makes its own?
I think so.
Yeah. So like I got that. I don't know where I put it. I'm sure I spent it again because I'm an idiot, but I definitely got it when I visited a couple years ago, right? Like there's little things like that, but the bills, because they were printed centrally, they didn't want to offend any of their member countries. So they put generic bridges on them. And along comes this little town in the Netherlands.
Ah, the Dutch.
So apparently this town went and built bridges across the river in the city center to match all of the stuff that's printed on the bills. So now every time you see the bill, it exists in this town in the Netherlands.
And they did all of them, right?
Yeah, six of them.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And it's just, yeah, it's absolutely hysterical to me. So I can't say the name of the town, but Spikenisse, Spijkenisse, printed the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But you tell me there's an eighth bill.
There is an eighth bill. I learned this today while randomly poking around on YouTube, I think. I ran across a video on the 0 euro bill. So for the exact reasons that you just highlighted why they don't have, you know, I mean, the premise is, right, they can't, if they started using national monuments from places in the EU on the bills, then every country would have a conniption and want to be part of it and makes the whole process much more complex. So the EU has sanctioned 0 euro bills, which are actually printed with the watermarks and the UV ink and has local monuments for each country. So each country can have a series of, I think there's, like they were saying, there's thousands of them. Like you can find them at, like, there's one for the Arch de Triomphe and you can buy it there. They have a little machine that'll vend them out.
Interesting. So there it's actually a souvenir thing, but it's true. It's quote unquote legal tender, even though it has no value.
Exactly.
Huh. Okay. Okay.
I was surprised.
Yeah. Already. That's kind of crazy, but I can dig it. Now I got to go find them.
I was going to say, now you have something new to collect.
Just what I needed. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Jerk.
My work here is done.
I mean, it's not like I'm going to Europe anytime soon, so there's that, but
minor little detail.
Yeah, so it goes. Things to keep an eye on for the coming week. Americans got earnings out, so to a bunch of other smaller airlines. Cathay Pacific is expected to rejigger its sort of workforce and schedule and operations badly, or significantly, such that we expect a lot of layoffs. Who the hell knows? Lots of other exciting things going on there. So, yeah, that's what's going on. But in the meantime, I think that's all for now on this episode. A little bit more from Hong Kong coming up in the bonus episode for our Patreon listeners. Beyond that, thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at @dotslines. If you leave us a comment or send us a note, we occasionally include those topics on the discussion for the episode. So, you know, that's always exciting. Or moredotsmorelines.com, which I'm pretty convinced no one ever actually visits, but we still have it. So yay, websites. And that's all. Take care.
Have fun.